The following program is rated M16+. Parental guidance recommended. It contains strong theme topics, drug use, alcohol use, violence and self-harm.
Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening in on JRN1. Bounce Back's a fun little talkback show with Perth comedians. Today I have a comedian, John Wing, and we're talking about his journey with OCD.
Hello.
Hi, John.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for saying yes.
No. Thank you for having me back. Last time was great.
I really do value this. John's very young, and I think the theme for Mental Health Week, WA Mental Health Week this year, is children. So,
oh yeah, I'm a child.
You technically do fit into that category.
I am. I'm not 18. I'm 17. Yeah. So I'm not 18 until February. So I'm quite experienced in being a child right now.
You're doing a good job of it.
No, yeah, thank you. Thank you. I try.
You're very mature as well for someone of your age, I've got to say.
I think that comes down to a lot of experience in, like, again, experiencing a lot of mental health, knowing a lot of people who've gone through a lot of bad stuff with their mental health. You grow up a bit faster because you see a lot more of the world than you normally or probably should at that age, and you kind of grow a bit.
Yeah.
It's not the best way to grow, but also it's a way that you grow, you know, because you got to grow to get through it.
John, what does OCD mean?
So OCD means obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, OCD is a very different disorder than like how people use it colloquially. A lot of the time people are just like, oh man, I got to clean my house because I'm so OCD, which doesn't make sense because that's not even grammatically correct. But like it's a thing where it's an anxiety disorder. So, you know, a lot of other disorders are irrational. So like a psychological or a psychotic disorder is more like you're irrationally thinking about what's going to happen, and you think that there might be something hiding around the place or something like that. OCD is very similar, but it's rational. You know that it's not going to happen, but you have to do it anyway just because you're afraid of it.
Okay. And what age were you diagnosed?
I was 14 when I was diagnosed.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your journey to get diagnosed then.
Oh, man. It was strange. OCD comes in a lot of different forms. There's a lot of different subtypes of it because everyone has different things that they obsess over. And like for me, my obsession is being hated. So I obsess over the idea of being a bad person, if I'm a bad person or not. If people hate me, if people really want to, like, if I'm seen as the kind of like the villain.
That must have been so hard being in high school.
Oh, man, yeah.
That would have been terrible.
It was, yeah. I mean, high school's terrible for anyone anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're going around high school and you're just constantly afraid of what you've done morally or anything like that, even if you've done nothing wrong.
Wow.
OCD isn't rational in that sense. That's why it's a disorder. It's not just like, oh, did I do something to annoy them? It's you'll think about it for hours of the day and you'll do compulsions to try and get rid of the thought. One of my compulsions used to be I would scratch my arm until I started to bleed, and then I would be able to like stop. I'd be able to calm down, but that only lasted for a few minutes till the thoughts come back, and that's just how it works.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so if you had that as a compulsion as well, and I guess you were hurting yourself then.
No, yeah, it was. It's not self-harm in the same way that, like, you know, someone with severe depression or someone feeling suicidal self-harms, where it's a way of hurting yourself to, I don't know, sometimes it can be, like, just for that release of something. But with OCD, it's more this, you know how in certain, like, religions or a certain ideology, they'll do practices to get rid of a certain bad omen or a bad deity or something.
Yeah.
It's exactly what OCD is. They're called rituals when you go to therapy. Yeah. They're called rituals because what it is it's a ritual to scratch my arm every time that I think people hate me. And that's why I very rarely don't wear long sleeves anymore. You know, I stopped wearing long sleeves on stage a while back.
Yeah.
But I just feel more comfortable wearing long sleeves. So I've just started doing it again because it's a mechanism that helps me not want to scratch my arm anymore. Of course, I've been to like tons of therapy and stuff nowadays, and I don't want to a lot of the time. But when it does come up, it's really strong. So it's nice to have that barrier there straight away where it's like, no, you can't without lifting it up. And then you can think more about it.
Oh, so it's like a pause mechanism, having a long... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. So what happened to get you diagnosed? What, who, did anyone acknowledge or was there a flag or...
Nah. It's, the thing is, OCD presents itself in kids as just being a weird kid a lot of the time, like most disorders. A lot of parents never look at their kid and are like, man, my kid's messed up.
Yeah, you know? But we don't know.
No, exactly. You're that's how it works. Exactly. You know? That's how it is.
We love and accept you.
Exactly. Yeah. Parents, like, I've never blamed my parents for not picking up on it earlier because kids are weird. Kids do weird stuff all the time. So you can never tell if a kid has a disorder. That's why you don't diagnose a kid with a disorder like OCD until they're older, because it could just be something they grew out of. And it could have been something that I grew out of, but it just happened not to be. You know, that's why it's so difficult, I think, for parents, because a lot of the time parents end up blaming themselves, thinking what they did wrong, especially I know my parents did. And I had to like talk to them. I was like, nah, it's not your fault. I don't blame you guys at all. I've never felt any kind of resentment to my parents for my disorder. You know,
we all do the best that we know how. And I guess in this journey that you've been on with your parents, they're learning with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I've met your mum and dad and I think they're very supportive.
No. My parents are lovely. There's a lot of things that I'm not very lucky with, but I'm very lucky with my parents. I couldn't ask for better parents there. Because, like, not many other parents will let their kid go up to the city every single night to go watch comedy or do comedy.
Yeah.
You know, that's something a lot of parents just wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And they understand, and that's really good. So I'm very lucky there. I've got a support system a lot of kids don't have. Of course, like, it hasn't always been that secure, you know, because I didn't used to have a diagnosed disorder, you know, so it was a lot more just like how you normally would parent a kid, you know, just like, hey, you're doing fine, you can go to school and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, you just didn't want to go to school sometimes. But as I got older, it used to be a genuine, like, depression thing and an OCD thing.
Yeah. Parents. How did you get diagnosed and what was that process? That's all right, we deviated a little.
Yeah, yeah. The process for it is, man, I had a breakdown when I was 14, because I was shown some really messed up material on the internet. So some, like, really disturbing videos and stuff like that, just by some,
people
in my school. Yeah, in school, but out of school as well, and it was happening constantly.
Yeah,
and it really affected my OCD because I was like,
"Can I ask you, was that?" Because I know a few years ago, my son flagged something to me, and there was a trend going on in high schools in Perth, and there were real suicides that they were watching.
Oh yeah, no, that's been a thing for ages. Fuck. It's really horrible. It's really horrible.
I worried about people's mental health in that, because that is
absolutely
really
absolutely. Full on. It was stuff like that. It was self harm. It was a bunch of just messed up kind of stuff. And it's, I think a lot of the time people can handle things that other people can't.
Mm.
So when you bring up, like, when I brought it up, I was scared that people would be like, oh man, that's nothing. Why are you worried about that?
And they're dismissive of it.
Oh yeah, very dismissive of it. I mean, they're in high school as well. They're dealing with their own problems. They're kids. You know?
Everyone's and they
kids
don't have and
they're that, exactly. They're not emotionally they're kids. Yeah. They're 13, 14. They don't know what's going on as much as I don't know what's going on. I could look at them at the time and I was like, why are they treating me like this? But at the time they were like, why am I here? I hate high school too. And they didn't want to be around me either. I didn't want to be around them. That's just how it was, because it's a very different time in people's lives. You know, you can't look at because I had some kids in, like, kindy. I hated kindy. I was bullied a lot in kindy. And it was probably one of my least favorite years of school, which is weird, you know, but I don't look back at these toddlers and think, man, they suck. I hate these toddlers. You know, they were toddlers too. They were probably experiencing things that I had no clue about. They were probably feeling the same way, feeling like they were being bullied or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you can't look at your past as a kid and be like, man, all these other kids suck, you know? Sometimes adults are different. There were some adults in my life that were just horrible. But, you know, that's different. They have, like, a cognitive thing, whereas a lot of the kids are, like, a lot of the reason that I have as bad OCD as I do is because of kids in my school and, like, the things they would show me and the people that I would end up hanging out with. But I don't resent them or anything.
They didn't know any better.
No. They were probably anxious about seeing it as well, and they wanted to show someone else to get it off their chest, because I know I did that and I felt horrible about doing that.
Yeah.
You know, where I saw this video And I felt so guilty because of watching it. I started scratching. Another thing I used to do was I used to count stairs, where I'd walk up and down the stairs and count them, even though if I know the stairs in my house are that there's 16 stairs, but I would have to count them 5 times before I'd feel safe, before I felt good. But then, like 5 minutes later, you'd have to count them again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's a safe way of counting steps, isn't it?
Hurting. Safe. I mean, sure, it's not damaging myself as in I'm not scratching myself, but the effect is still the same.
Okay. Yeah. You
know, like I'm not too worried about scratching myself to hurt my arm. I've been skating since I was 9. I get tons of grazes and scratches all the time. You know, it's worse when you're doing it to yourself because you're scared, but it's not the same way that you self-harm. If you're depressed, it's a way of relieving anxiety because of a OCD, you know, it's an obsession.
Yeah.
And it's a compulsion. So it's a lot different where I think about walking up the stairs the same way I do about scratching my arm. I just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like I get really afraid of it, but stairs I'm all right with now. It was bad. I went to a cricket game once with my dad and there's a lot of stairs in stadiums and I got so embarrassed because I had a moment where I had to count these stairs and I was walking up and down these like massive stairs in the stadium and I knew people were looking at me and it freaked me out. That's one of the worst memories that I have from that. That's way worse than scratching.
Yeah.
Is having to.
Because that's that judgment, isn't it?
No, yeah, it is. And it's not something you can control either. I couldn't turn around and say, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? I knew it was stupid. I knew that if I did this, I knew I wasn't like that bad of a person anyway.
I don't think it's stupid either. It's a compulsion.
No. Yeah, so, it is. It's like, I knew it was something that I didn't need to do. I knew that it was something that if I did it, I would still feel like doing it again afterwards.
Mm.
But it's not something you can control. It's kind of like smoking, you know, it's kind of like an addiction that people get. It's like you get this thing that helps you.
Yeah.
And then you use it. And then every now and again, you need to use it again. And then that time before you need to use it again gets shorter and shorter and shorter. But this time, instead of just being like a habit, it's directly because of a thought comes into your head, you know? So that's tough. A lot of people with OCD end up with like finding out later on in life and they've just been doing these things for ages and people just think they're like nervous tics, like tapping or counting and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. When you were diagnosed, is a way to treat it, is there medication or is there strategies or is there something that is given as a tool to help you manage?
Yeah. Yeah, there is. Definitely is. But like any kind of mental health thing, it really varies.
Yeah.
You know, because like anytime you go to a mental health clinic, the first thing they say is breathing exercises, which is good. I think they should do that first because otherwise they could be treating someone who has a much simpler problem than like a severe mental health disorder. And maybe that is what they need. Because I've met people who do only need breathing exercises to calm down, which is strange to me. It's bizarre to me, but it works for them. So I think it's good that they start with the basics and then move up, you know? But for me, that doesn't work. I can't do breathing exercises because then I start counting the breaths and that starts becoming a compulsion in itself. So I can't do that. It used to really stress me out when they told me to do that.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah, and then cognitive behavioral therapy is the main one for OCD. And cognitive behavioral therapy is, I don't know the exact definition or anything or like what it entails, but I just know what mine was. And mine was, we had like a piece of paper where we'd write down, one that I remember specifically was, I was afraid of knives being in the kitchen. Because being in my head, I thought being a bad person, I would end up hurting someone with the knives, which is a horrible thought to have when your parents are walking around the kitchen and your friends are over and stuff. That's the hardest part, is that emotional thing of seeing everyone around you that you care about, and then having this thought come in your head of like, you're a bad person, you would do this.
Mm.
So that was the first thing, is I would have to, the first thing, you set up a list of things that are kind of give you anxiety,
yep.
And you do those until they don't give you anxiety anymore, and the list goes down and down and down until it's holding the knife and cutting something with the knife while people are in the room with you.
Yeah, wow.
So that's it. Started with me just being in the kitchen,
yeah,
not even getting the knife out of the drawer or anything, just being in the kitchen, just standing there, no one else around, and that gave me anxiety.
Yeah,
just that thought itself. So you do that, and you try and time how long you go without having to do a compulsion, or you time yourself how long you have to, like, you'll time yourself or you'll rate your anxiety on how bad it is, and you do that until you can do it fine, you know? And the worst thing about OCD is when you're fine, you don't think about it anymore. Mm. That's the whole thing, you know? Like, I used to wake up in the morning and my first thought would be, I'm a bad person. I'm a horrible person.
Wow.
And that would be my first thought. But then after a while, it would be like my second thought and then my third thought. And now it's like an hour. Nowadays, it's like an hour into the day before that happens. And that sounds bad for a lot of people. But for me, that's like
progress.
I never thought that could happen in a million years.
Yeah.
I'd be able to make it an hour without thinking like that. Like, that's genuinely, like, my life is kind of perfect.
Yeah.
After that, I feel amazing after that. Because, of course, like, a lot of people look at people with mental health disorders or any kind of, like, mental struggle, and they're like, they think that I would get rid of it. But when you've lived with it for so long, I don't know what getting rid of it would be like.
Mm. And also, it's your normal, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. And it's like, all you can do is make it affect your life less and get better at dealing with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I would get rid of it, because as much as it's like, if I was born without it, if I could never have it, I would never have it.
You wouldn't know.
But now I have it, you know?
Mm.
And the idea of my brain not picking up on this shit all the time, that's something that I don't understand that. That's, yeah, like, that's incomprehensible to me.
Yeah.
You know.
Sorry, John, one of the things that I've been working on is youth mental health because of my son. And a youth that I came into contact with, he actually suggested something which I think is really great, and I thought I'll get your insight on it. He was saying one of the things that lacked in schools was education about mental health and a safe space for people to go to have safe conversations and a safe zone, rather than, he said that he felt that it was very heavy on drug and alcohol sexual awareness, but mental health lacked. But what's your insight?
I agree entirely.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone in a high school who wouldn't agree with that.
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre, because that's all that they get told when they need feedback forms. And then they look at it and they're like, we know better than these kids. It's like, why'd you ask for the feedback forms then? What's the point of the feedback forms? I would definitely agree with him. I think it needs to be an even spread of all those things. Like, there needs to be sexual health awareness, there needs to be drug abuse awareness, there needs to be, like, that kind of stuff. But whenever they focus on mental health, it's only anxiety and depression, which is important. You know, I have clinical depression, and that sucks. You know, I wouldn't want anyone to have that.
No, that's hard.
But it's not the only thing I have. You know, it's not the only thing a lot of people end up having. And I think there needs to be a way that they address more mental health disorders, specifically disorders, because disorders are brushed away, because they're, even still nowadays, they're seen as kind of like a gross, weird thing. People, they find out you have a disorder, they're like, oh, poor guy, you know, whereas, you know, I'm doing the same stuff everyone else does.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, the things in my head work a little differently. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And so people look at a disorder and they think, nah, kids don't need to know about that because that's too heavy of a subject. But I really don't think it is at all.
I think kids can cope with it. And the
kids can cope with so much.
Yeah. And the kids that are going through it, they need to know it's normal.
No, they do. They do. I had no clue it was normal. When you think, when you think you're a bad person every day, you walk in the kitchen, you see a knife, you think, oh my God, I'm such a bad person. I could stab someone with this knife. I hate myself.
Mm.
And you have no clue that there's some kind of person you can talk to about that, as in thoughts like that could be a disorder of some sort.
Yeah.
Or even if it's not, you need a kid to be able to talk about that stuff, but they never let you talk about that. They're just like, are you feeling sad? Are you feeling scared of something? That's it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas there's more complex things in a kid's head. Every single day of a kid's life, there's way more complex things than happy and sad. You know, maybe a baby is going happy and sad when it's like, you know, getting its rattle or something like that. But it's a teenager. This is high school, you know, like there's so much going on that you can't just be like, are you depressed or anxious? Because a kid doesn't know
how
what their emotions actually kind of feel like. And it was never brought up. And that was why I was very suicidal, is because I would spend every day thinking I was awful, awful. And it's irrational, but in therapy, there was a genuine point in my life where, and this sounds really stupid, but I thought I was worse than Hitler.
And that, wow.
It sounds really stupid now. And I always feel so.
Yeah, but that's how you feel. Yeah.
And it sounds like a joke. It sounds like something stupid or just like a throwaway hyperbolic comment to a lot of people. And when I say it now, it sounds like that to me. I'm like, how could you ever think that? That doesn't make sense, you know? But I genuinely, because of my disorder, I was never told that. I never had any clue about what OCD was, especially not my OCD. And it made me think, wow, I'm genuinely this bad of a person. I want to kill myself. I don't want to be around people because I can hurt people. And that makes me so sad that I think they would be safer if I was dead, you know? And that's like, that was my parents. That was my sister. That was my friends. That was when we got a dog. I was so scared. We had to delay getting the dog because I had to go to hospital because I was freaking out about getting the dog so much. Because I was just like, I was banging my head against the wall and stuff. And that was a weird compulsion. There were so many compulsions that I had. But that's because I had very severe OCD. It's very mild now.
Mm.
You know, that's something a kid never really, at least me as a kid, I never knew that there was something such as OCD. I thought I was just the worst.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a grasp on your head being something that other people can understand.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, you think your head is your head. No one else can understand what your thoughts are. You know, you can say words and you can be like, hey, I like that movie. And other people could be like, yeah, I like that movie too. Or they could be like, I could tell you like that movie. But you don't understand that people can be like, you can tell them, I feel like this. What does that mean? Or what kind of things can I do to help? And then then they'll actually give you advice and they'll help you and they'll sit down and talk to you.
Yeah.
Because that's thoughts aren't tangible like that. And it's never talked about in school. I had no clue about that. I only know about that now. I'm lucky. I did a Cert 3 in community services, which is a lot of mental health support with stuff. Because I wanted to get into youth work. And it was a lot of mental health support stuff. So I did my Cert 3 in that. And that's why I know a lot about this stuff as well.
Yeah.
You know? I'm really lucky to have the experiences that I have because a lot of kids don't have an outlet to find these experiences. And it sucks that I had to live through it before I could know about any of this because that's not how it should be for any industry. Could you imagine if only surgeons, were only wanting to be surgeons because they had to have a surgery, like a major surgery when they were a kid, you know? That's exactly what mental health services are like right now.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many people who work in mental health services who don't have a struggle with mental health or have experienced a struggle with mental health.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, I think in a way it's good that they have that kind of experience with it. But, you know, that's only because we look at it like it's something that isn't like a medical thing.
Mm.
You know, you look at it, you're like, oh, but it's so intangible, you can't tell what it is. And that's true. You can't look in a head and pick out the cells of a memory or something like that, you know? But there are things that are very common that you can do to help.
Yeah.
And people don't know about them, especially kids. I had zero clue. And that's why that leads to things like suicide.
Yeah.
You know, that leads to things like suicide.
That's something we've definitely got to reduce in teenagers.
No, of course, man. Like, I've known too many people who have died from suicide.
Oh, sorry, John.
Yeah,
that's really hard.
Yeah,
John, what's some of your coping strategies then?
Oh, nowadays, I think one of my main right now is writing. Mm-hmm. Writing's really good because that people always see me carrying around my notebook and stuff, and they're like, "Man, he must be writing. He's always working on his jokes and stuff." But really, it's a way of relieving anxiety for me. And like people ask, I don't want to be pretentious and be like, oh, here's what it is. You know, I'm doing it to make myself feel better, you know, because it's so painful in my head. But it's just like, that's just what it is for me every day. And a lot of people don't understand that. So if you say that, they're like, oh my God, he's so edgy.
Yeah.
What is he doing? So I'm just like, no, I just like drawing. I like writing and stuff. And I, I think that's a fine way to get around it. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of things where your genuine emotions that you experience every day, like being so anxious that you have to just write and draw to distract yourself, that's my daily life, you know? But I can't say that because that sounds really edgy. That sounds like, whoa, this kid's like 17. He doesn't actually know what it's like to be that anxious or anything like that. I just kind of avoid saying it,
yeah.
Which I think I know that it shouldn't be like that. But also I can't change the world overnight by being some kind of martyr behind it and like, no, it's okay. You guys hit me with these bullets and yeah. I'll be able to get back. It's like, no, it's the only way to do it is through actual education.
Yeah, having meaningful like conversations yeah. like yeah, these no, and, is, yeah. and educating people.
No, yeah, yeah.
We've got to normalize things. It is a normal thing for people to experience. Speaking yeah. of which, John, for other people experiencing what you have,
yeah.
what would yeah. be a message that you'd send to them?
Oh, man.
I know it's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing is, you always think that there's not many people who you're close enough to talk about this stuff with. Because I didn't think I could talk to my mom or my parents about this, and I definitely didn't think I could talk to my friends about this. And because of that, I did the opposite, and I talked to a call line first. And I think that's one thing in the mental health industry, you know, as weird as that is to say. But I think that's one thing that is very valuable is anonymous lines where you can call people and talk about your problems and have someone who can genuinely respond without them being in your life afterwards. I would say if you don't think that you have anyone that you can actually talk to, you more than likely do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say you do because I've met people who don't have that, and that sucks, but that's why these anonymous tip lines and anonymous call lines and stuff like that, like Lifeline and Beyond Blue and stuff like that, they're very important. So if you have someone in your life that you can actually talk to, someone in your life that you can actually, like, you feel safe telling about these things, or you feel like you're not going to be judged talking about these things, do that.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. And I think the thing is, if you don't, definitely you need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Because that's the worst part about a mental health disorder is it's not a visible disorder, you know? Like if I have like a physical disorder and I'm struggling to walk, I can't walk properly. People can see that because I'm trying to walk, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a mental health disorder and the only thing people can see is you can't get out of bed, they're going to think you're tired, you know, or there's a bunch of different things that could be.
Yeah.
It's not like a symptom. It's kind of like the common cold in a way. It's a symptom that can be of so many different things.
Yeah.
That you have no clue.
People need to be more curious than judgmental.
Exactly. And when you get a cold that's a bit more persistent than normal, you go to the doctor to find out what it actually is.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just go, oh, it's just a cold forever.
Yeah.
And you just keep dealing with it. What you do is you go to the doctor and you try and figure out what it is. People don't do that with mental health. They'll have these consistent distressing thoughts, or they'll have the consistent distressing mental health experiences, and they won't go talk to anyone about it because it's not something anyone can see. So how could anyone believe them?
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing, is just being believed.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah, being seen and being heard. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Mental health is such a different thing than like a physical injury or a physical disorder or a disability, but it's not so different that you can't go to a doctor and talk about it. You can go to your GP and tell them about it. That's how I did it.
Yeah.
You know, I went to my GP and I had to say something because I was like, this is too much. And you know, again, I'm very lucky that I have my parents. I didn't tell my parents first because I was afraid, but I do have very supportive parents that I eventually felt safe enough to tell them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have that. So talk to these call lines. Of course, sometimes it won't work for everyone, but I think for me, my advice would be talk to these call lines and ask for advice. Find services in your area that you can talk to. A lot of services for young people will not actually give the information to their parents.
Yeah.
And I know that because I had to do work placement at these places for my certificate, you know, for my Cert 3, which isn't the most prestigious kind of thing that you can get. But it's like I did deal with people coming in with serious things going on in their lives, their home lives. And anonymity is like the key thing.
It's
the key thing in mental health for youth is making sure that you ask them who they feel safe telling. It's not about if they will be safe telling them, you know, like they might be the easy, like they'll be really easygoing parents. They'll be very happy to look after their kid. But if the kid doesn't feel safe telling them, you don't tell the parents because that throws off their whole balance and that makes their journey so much harder to get through. So you've really got to listen to professionals as well, you know, because they've got your best interest in mind. It doesn't always feel like that. And that's another thing, because most people don't go to the doctors and think the doctor is against them, you know, or that the doctor's going to misdiagnose them all of a sudden, even though it is a possibility and it happens a lot. People get misdiagnosed with physical disorders and disabilities and stuff all the time. Like they'll get ailments and they'll get misdiagnosed. But people don't hold that as a resentment.
Yeah.
People aren't like, man, this is why you shouldn't trust doctors. People are like, this is a part of the process and this is how it gets done. And a lot of the time you don't get misdiagnosed, but sometimes you do. You know, I was misdiagnosed with schizophrenia when I first started experiencing OCD, but they had to dig deeper into it to find out that it was OCD.
Mm.
And like, that's the same with any kind of ailment that you get physically. But people look at mental disabilities and disorders as such a different thing.
Yeah, they do.
They do. They look at it so differently that it's like you can't go to the doctors and go through a process to figure it out. And it's also, it's not easy.
No.
You know, mental health process, going to the GP and stuff and getting a mental, like a wellness check and stuff like that, that takes way longer than it should. And that's something that like I have no clue how to fix. I just got out of high school. I'm not really.
No, I'm with
I've got,
you.
I've got no clue how to fix on that, but. There needs to be some way that the same way as you get a referral to another place for like an ankle injury or something, you need to be able to get a referral way easier to a psychiatric, like a psychiatric.
And get seen too faster.
You do. You do. And
absolutely.
The worst
it's critical to life.
You never, it is so slow in the mental health industry because it's
saturated.
It's not that it's not taken so seriously. It's that it's seen as such a different thing.
Yeah.
Instead of being treated as something that, you know, a person needs to get better with, you know, a person needs to be able to get better with this disorder.
No, they do.
And like it going to like a therapist or a psychologist, you're on a waiting list for ages.
Yeah.
And because you're on that waiting list, all you're thinking is like, man, what are they doing? Why don't they care? Why don't they care about me?
Mm.
You know, and that's what I was thinking. I was like, why?
And you're
why
in survival mode.
No, you are. Yeah. And again, you're a kid, you know? Everything's very self-centered.
Yeah.
When you're younger, everything's very self-centered, and it's not a bad thing. That's that's a survival thing, like you said. That's like lions in the wild, they don't go, "Man, I hope everyone else gets this dead deer that I'm eating." They're like, "No, this is mine. I'm hungry. I want this."
Yeah.
That's the same for a kid. They're like, "I want this help. I don't care about what anyone else is getting for help. I want this help." You know, sometimes everything's really complicated.
Mm.
You know, there's always things that can go differently for different people. But I think normalizing these things and seeking professional help and realizing that it's not something that is lonely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you don't have to be alone in this journey.
No, you definitely don't have to be alone. You know, because you hear about it. It's not the same thing as like, you know, you're going through a personal struggle in your life, you know, where you're, you know, maybe you can't pay bills for the week or rent's low and you don't have money for rent. You know, that sucks, but you don't always want to burden other people with that. Like I have times where, like, of course, I don't live by myself or anything, so I can't speak on it too, but I have times where I won't be able to pay petrol because I drive everywhere and I won't be able to pay petrol. And so you just kind of put up with it, having that low petrol and not being having to be a bit more like frugal with how you drive, you know? But it's not like that with your mental health. It's not like that.
Yeah.
So you might not tell someone that you have low petrol because you're like, "Oh, it's important that I do get petrol at some point, but I don't need to tell everyone about it because it's like something that's kind of minor in the grand scheme of things." Your mental health is like, as much as people don't want to say it or it's shocking to people, it can be life or death. It can definitely be life or death.
Yeah, so it is vital that we start to improve on those time delays. Yeah. John, we have to leave it there.
How long was that? That didn't feel good.
That's
wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's been great. No, thank you for being so raw and honest and just sharing. Educating.
Yeah.
Education is so, so vital, as we talked about. We've actually got a mental health awareness comedy coming up at the Chows on the 27th of October.
Yeah,
so if you're available, please.
I would love to. I'd love to do that.
That would be great.
Definitely.
So you've been listening to Yvonne Fletcher and John Wing. Thank you all for listening in. Thanks, John.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.